Needle. An architecturally daring structure, imaginative, beautiful. From its inception, it was destined to become world famous.
Well, this isn't exactly new territory, but we're starting the podcast off today with an insert. We originally recorded the podcast on Tuesday morning. It is now Wednesday afternoon, Elliot, and we've got to talk about very important things like Space Needle. Go.
So Milbury knows Toronto. Remember, he used to work at Hockey Night in Canada. He came into Toronto every weekend. He'd have dinner with Kelly and a glass of wine with Kelly every Friday night. So it's not like he doesn't know what the CN Tower is. So first of all, let me just say this about Mike, who everyone should know we loved working with. Like, he's a hilarious guy. And I'll tell a Mike Milbury story about working with Milbury in a couple of minutes that is my favorite. And if PJ Stock is listening to this, he will fall over laughing. So Milbury tweets out, first of all, he's whining in the Columbus game about how long it's going. Like, he's got a dinner date or something like that. He just wants to get out of there.
Yeah.
And he says, on another worldly night. So instead of an otherworldly night, it's another worldly night. Space Needle is an appropriate backdrop. Insane Columbus TB game. God bless both teams for a great effort. Enough, though. I believe we should end these games sooner via 3-3 or shootout after a time. What do you think? First of all, he's totally wrong about overtime. We have one long overtime in these playoffs, and someone's crying to end it short. Forget that. Like, throw that out. The day we go to 3-on-3 overtime or shootouts in the playoffs, I really hope I'm at retirement age because I don't want to be here for that. But the rest of it, I can only imagine Milbury laughing as he types it out, saying, let's see how people react to this. It's performance art. It's maybe the greatest tweet ever, except for the thesis.
You know what performance art is called on Twitter?
What's that?
Trolling.
Yeah.
See, I read that and I'm like, because I'm with you. Mike would leave CBC, and when you walk along Front Street, you're right in front of the CN Tower. And I loved working with Mike. I'm with you. Like, funny guy, smart guy, worked hard, really gracious. I mean, at a couple of those dinners as seasons wrapped up, I mean, he would get up and make like really nice, thoughtful speeches and would mention everybody.
Yes.
But right away, Mike, I read the tweet. I'm like, Mike is just trying to get, like, Mike is getting under everybody's fingernails right here. Mike is just trying to get a rise out of everybody. This is essentially a face wash in a scrum, is how I read that tweet for each.
Oh, it was awesome. I was laughing so hard. I had to give it the thumbs down because I really disagree with the whole overtime idea. But
yeah,
I got to tell you, I was crying in laughter at the rest of that tweet. It was awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Tell the Milbury story.
Okay, so at that time, the satellite hot stove in the second intermission was Mike, myself, and Eric Francis. And so we'd have a meeting about what we wanted to talk about, and PJ would be in the meeting room, and he would be watching the game while we did the meeting with producer Brian Spear. And Brian would come in every week, and he'd go, okay, Elliot, what do you got? Eric, what do you got? And Mike, what do you got? And I would list my things, and Eric would list his things, and Mike would listen. And he'd go, I'd like to talk about that, or I'd like to talk about that. But he wouldn't come with anything new. And finally, one week, Brian said to him, same thing. Elliot, what do you got? Eric, what do you got? Mike, what do you got? And finally, Mike, and he did this, like, he's not insulting Brian. He just finally says, look, this is the way it works. These two guys, and he points at me and Eric, they're the chefs. They make the meal. They go out, they buy the ingredients, and they make the meal. Me, I eat the meal. And PJ, PJ is done. He can't stop laughing. That might have been the hardest I've ever heard PJ laugh. Like he used to, every time we talk about Bilbrey, we just go, I eat the meal. And you have to understand, like, nobody here is insulted. Nobody here is mad because Mike's not insulting anyone. He just sees that as that's my role.
Yep.
And as you know, some guys who join us, they don't like giving information and they don't like asking people for information. It's not what they're comfortable with. And Mike is one of those guys. So every time we would have the meeting from every after that, it was, okay, chef one, what ingredients do you have? Chef two, what ingredients do you have? And Mike, how are you going to eat it? And it was just great. I love that Milbury. That was such a great Milbury moment.
When Mike was with us at hockey night, I remember one night going out with him after the show and we were talking about when he ran the Islanders. We were talking about drafts and he said to me, you know, it was my firm belief that if you get one player out of every draft, you're a success. As a matter of fact, he said, I remember one time where I offered the St. Louis Blues every single one of my picks for their first round pick. He wouldn't tell me what year it was. I always wondered whether it was the Eric Johnson year or not. But that always sort of stood out with me. Mike just saying, I'm like, Mike, you just wanted to go home. Or I was like, nope, I'm telling you, I would do it every year. I'll offer you all of my picks in exchange for your first round pick.
It must be an Islander thing then because Gar Snow tried that with Ryan Murray.
Did that as well with Columbus, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, the five overtime game. 3-2 Tampa Bay Lightning, Braden Point with the game-winning goal. He scores a pair in that game. It's the fourth longest game in NHL history. Jonas Korpisalo sets a new record, 85 saves, 151 shots in total. I sent Kelly Rudy a text right away when he made save number 74, thinking about 1987 and the Easter Epic. Seth Jones, 65 minutes and 6 seconds. Victor Hedman plays, welcome back, 57 minutes. Your thoughts on the fourth longest game in NHL history, Elliott?
Well, it was great drama and people loved it. The one thing I do agree on, and as we tape this insert, Carolina and Boston are in overtime right now. If this starts happening five times, people aren't going to like it as much. But I think that in this weird COVID stupid 2020, it just figures we get that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely figures we get that. I thought that should have been a penalty shot in overtime.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I hope Cassie's not listening to this and she doesn't think we're all ganging up on her. First of all, good on Cassie for standing up for her opinion.
Totally.
But I disagree with her on that one. Jean Hébert called two penalty shots in a Canadiens-Pittsburgh game. And one of them was in overtime.
They're both awful shots, too.
So the out was there. The out to call it was there. You know, I got one very interesting tweet. I guess there's a guy named Ed Frankovitz, and he does stats for...
I know Ed.
Yeah, you know, okay, I didn't know who he was. Yeah.
Washington.
He claimed, and this is right up your alley, Jeff. If anyone would do this, it would be you. He said in the Easter Epic, he thinks some of the defensemen in that game, particularly Scott Stevens, were at 60 and 70 minutes. But they weren't counting it at that time.
Yeah.
It's not official. And Dave Stubbs showed on his Twitter account, there is a score sheet. And Kelly's record is the official record because records are spotty. But I guess in the Mud Brunetto famous game from 1936, Norm Smith made 92 saves.
Correct. It wasn't an official stat at that point.
Right. But I guess Dave on his Twitter feed, their actual score sheet does exist. So, you know, we'll give Kelly the record because he's our teammate. But I'm curious, like, I wonder if anybody out there wants to do a serious project about how much did the defenseman in the Islander Washington Easter Epic play. Ed Frankovitz said he thought Scott Stevens might have played 70 minutes.
Wow, that is remarkable. Well, I can remember with the Brandon Wheat Kings, Brad McCrimmon playing at least 60 because he played a full game. I'm not sure if any of those games went into overtime, but I know that McCrimmon played at least one and maybe more complete games with the Wheat Kings. Of course, that's junior hockey and not the NHL. See, I love research projects like that. And I'll give you my favorite one. This was Lockout 2005. And Paul Patsku was a dear friend and one of the great hockey researchers of all time, part of the Society for International Hockey Research. We'd had a couple of different conversations about doing a Mythbusters-type show together, just for radio. And we ended up talking about Gordie Howe, and we ended up talking about the Gordie Howe hat trick. You know, he wasn't the first. That was Harry Cameron, Toronto Arena's 1917. And then we had the conversation turned into, well, I wonder how many Gordie Howe hat tricks Gordie actually had. And so Paul, as a research project, spent countless hours at the NHL, Hockey Hall of Fame Resource Center, going through all of Gordie Howe's game sheets to try to find how many he actually had. And there were only two in the history of Gordie's career. So if you're looking for a time to do it, you know, pandemic is a wonderful time. If you have time on your hands, young researchers, it would be fascinating to go back to, and to Ed's point, just to see how much Stevens did skate in that game. The only thing that I didn't like about that, you know me, Elliot, I nitpick stuff like this. The only thing, and I'm in the minority on this, I know. The only thing that I didn't like about the five overtime game, the goal wasn't ugly enough.
Oh, my God.
I like beautiful goals in, like, the 60 minutes. You want to see gorgeous games? When it gets that deep into an overtime, I want it, like, off someone's hip, off a skate. Like, I want a really bad, ugly goal. That, to me, is the right spot for ugly goals, especially in the year 2020. That goal was to nitpick the artistry of the whole thing, Elliot. Points goal wasn't ugly enough for me. What do you think of that?
I think that's the second worst take I've heard this week. I did my Vancouver radio hit the other night on Tuesday, and Sat Shaw, who I think is a really good guy, came at me. I can't even remember what it was, but it was such a bad take, I told him to stop.
One of the things that drives me crazy about the NHL in general, though, is the push towards parity at all times. And the fact that teams would be outraged that the Penguins would have won a lottery that is set up to be anti-tanking is just the most NHL thing ever to me. Because you don't want tanking. Because, you don't want that to happen. Because, you don't want to encourage teams having outright bad years year after year and selling their fans on products that aren't worth the price that you pay for your ticket. But at the same time, they're going to be outraged if a really good team ends up with a high-end player. Like, you can't have it both ways. Like, this push
constantly
parity drives me crazy.
This is an awful take. This is what I'm calling the Walker take of the week. Like, this is just an awful take. I'm just kidding, Andrew.
Well, this isn't a take. This is just an opinion.
No, that's a take. That's whatever. Take, opinion, they're all the same things.
Man, my bad takes can beat everybody. I just like ugly goals in overtime. I just think that overtime was made for ugly goals. Beautiful goals for the 60 minutes. Ugly goals are reserved for the overtime. Leafs press day. Leafs media day. Dubas, Shanahan, Keefe, and the players. What stood out for you, Elliot?
It was kind of what I expected. I think they know that the talk is cheap part has arrived. You can say whatever you want to say. I mean, the results speak. I think they all know that it's going to be an interesting offseason. And they're going to throw a lot of players out and test the market on them and see what comes up. I think that's what it's going to come down to. What is the value of our team? Now, the most interesting thing that Dubas said to me, which I suspected was true, is that he really went to Marner's defense. I think Dubas thinks very highly of Marner. There's so much noise around Mitch Marner that I think that sometimes people hear it and they think that that means the organization doesn't like them. As I wrote in the blog yesterday, and I really believe, I think the some of the talk around Marner obscures what the organization really thinks of him. And Dubas confirmed that to me. I'd be shocked if he's going anywhere.
I don't disagree with you. The one thing that stood out to me from Kyle Dubas was how he almost went out of his way to say, you guys think I only have one way to do things, or I only think about things in one specific way and that I never change. And it's almost as if he went out of his way to sort of chum the waters with, expect me to do things that you didn't expect me to do. And you talked about this in the blog this week as well. And I think maybe Kyle Clifford was that first indication, because Kyle Clifford was, in a lot of ways, Elliot, one of the first moves, although I guess you could say Cody Ceci might have been too, but from a physicality point of view, when the Kyle Clifford move was made, a lot of people said, well, that doesn't feel like a Kyle Dubas type move. Almost seems as if Dubas is saying, get ready, there are more non-traditional Kyle Dubas or non-stereotypical Dubas moves coming.
I do think some of that's coming. I put Gudis's name there, and people will hear what you had to say. I have one guy in the league who's already calling him future Leaf Radko Gudis. Guys in the playoffs for the Capitals.
But the interesting thing about that, I was making this point on Hockey Central as well, whether it's Kyle Clifford or Radko Gudis, the one thing that I don't think that Dubas will budge that much on is the underlying numbers are really good. They still have to be hockey players.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's the one thing that, what was the first thing that Kyle Dubas went out of his way to mention when they got Kyle Clifford for each? His underlyings are really good. And there's a player here. And we're not just picking up someone that's going to throw body checks and throw his weight around. Anything else stand out for you, whether Shanahan, Dubas, or Keefe?
You know what? I'm suddenly very curious about Joe Thornton. Yeah.
From a Maple Leafs point of view or from a Joe Thornton point of view?
Everyone. I wonder if he's going to be a Leaf next year.
Interesting. Would you shave the beard off if Joe Thornton came to Toronto?
Well, I'm launching the charity initiatives, I think today or tomorrow. So once I get to a certain number, it's coming off.
All right, then. Always for a good cause. as is this insert. Thanks for allowing us to delay the podcast release, but wanted to get a lot of stuff in. We now return you to your regularly scheduled 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
It's a dreamlike setting from a dreamlike vantage point. Harbors, mountains, the picturesque beauty of the Pacific Northwest. It was the allure of this region that called into being the unique structure which is now Seattle's permanent symbol in the sky, the Space Needle.
Leave the mosquito bit in, Alma. I hate mosquito bites.
Oh, kitten.
No, no, I can deal with it. It's not a problem. I just hate them.
Elliot, we're going to go through a lot of teams today and find out where they're at. Little snapshot of what's happening with Pittsburgh, what's happening with Nashville, where does Minnesota go now? But I think we should begin with one of the big stories, and you write about it a lot in 31 Thoughts at sportsnet.ca, and that is the audit on the Toronto Maple Leafs and the question, what's next? Whether it's team, whether it's individual player, whether it's people on the bench, whether it's people in the front office. Let's begin with the big four. Auston Matthews, John Tavares, Mitch Marner, William Nylander. Snapshot, those four players.
I think that it was always Kyle Dubas's plan to bring them back for one more year. The most difficult thing about this season, Jeff, is how do you properly break down or make decisions on a time where you were off for 5 months and then had to rush back for this kind of a short-term event and you lose in a five-game series. And the way Dubas thinks, I tend to believe he would be aware of the pitfalls of that. But what's Mike Tyson's old line? Everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs got punched in the face. There's no question about that. So I think you're in a situation where you're suddenly looking at it and you're saying, okay, what's available to us? Look, Matthews was their best player. He's not getting traded. Tavares is not getting traded. I'm on the train that Marner's not getting traded. So who's getting traded? Well, from your forwards, you've got four guys in the next 2 years, their cash is less than their cap hit. And it happens for Nylander this year. It happens for Kapanen this year. It happens for Kerfoot next year. It happens for Johnsson next year. I think they dip their toes in the water. They put those guys out there and they see, okay, what are our options? What comes available out of this? And we go from there.
Mitch Marner, this for the second summer in a row now, is facing scrutiny.
Yep.
Last year, it was about the contract. This year, it's about the performance. And this is someone who was much loved by, there was a joy that Marner brought to playing in the NHL, really captured the imagination of a lot of Toronto Maple Leafs fans, wildly creative player. Then the contract situation happened last season. That soured a lot of people. And then the underperformance this season has soured even more. What's happening with the Marner camp? What's happening with Mitch Marner and the Maple Leafs?
Well, after they lost, you know, just in, you know, texting and making calls on Monday, I heard some stuff about Marner's name being out there. And, you know, after, I mean, I don't know what year this is for Marner. I can't count that high. What is it, year four? One thing I've learned is that what's out there is not always the reality. There's a certain amount of paranoia that comes from some people close to Marner. It's not from him, but it's around him. And there's a belief that, oh, he's not respected, or the team doesn't like him, or they're going to get rid of him. And I've learned over the years that's not necessarily the reality. I think sometimes there's a view that the Leafs think a certain way of him, and it's just not true. You know, this year, he was the Maple Leafs nominee for the King Clancy Trophy. The King Clancy Trophy has a large community service proponent to it. It's about being out in the community and making yourself available and trying to make your NHL market a better place and generally being very nice to people. And Marner was Toronto's rep. He was Toronto's choice. And I was told it wasn't even close. Like, he was their rep by a mile. And I know that in the organization, they felt that they didn't know how it was going to go after a very difficult negotiation, as you pointed out, Jeff, but they said he was incredible. And they really feel highly of him. And as a person and as a player, they think he's got a chance to be in the Art Ross conversation for a long time. Now, he didn't play as well as they hoped. I'm sure he didn't play as well as he hoped. But I think they see a lot there. And I would be shocked if he got traded. I really would. I still think they see him as a big part of their group. And I would be surprised if he got traded.
See, the interesting thing about Mitch Marner right now with Maple Leafs and Maple Leafs fans specifically is normally, and this is historical going back to Larry Murphy, the Maple Leafs fans always pick one defenseman, and that defenseman becomes representative of everything that is wrong with the team. You can go Larry Murphy, you can go Aki Berg, you can go Corey Cross, you can go Brian McCabe, you can go Pavel Kubina.
Which one are you picking on this team?
The thing is, that list is normally endless. But this time around, it seems as if all the scorn is being heaped on Mitch Marner. That's the one that Maple Leafs fans are targeting, saying, you know, he wanted $3 million too much. It was an acrimonious contract situation. When you ask for that money, you better live up to the terms. And you didn't. The unique thing here is, for the first time in my memory, Elliot, Leafs fans are going after a forward. That's unique in this market.
I think it goes both ways. You know, maybe it's because I spend way too much time on social media, Jeff. Mm-hmm. But the world on social media is more polarized than ever. And it's not just in sports. It's everywhere. And what I see out there is that he's got his supporters, he's got his detractors, and they're just vicious towards each other.
Frederik Andersen and that decision. And I guess the obvious question is, are the Maple Leafs sold on this goaltender?
I don't think they're extending him, if that's what you're asking me.
Mm-hmm.
If he's back next year, I think they're prepared to go in with him as an unrestricted free agent to be.
And just play it out and let him walk away?
And if they decide not to do it, they don't do it. Sorry, I've got a mosquito flying around my office here. Go away. Look, you can't extend him right now. There were times in that series I thought he was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And then there was game five. And the one thing right now is there is a glut of goaltending candidates out there. Look who's available. Markstrom, Holtby, Khudobin, good 1B guy. Greiss, good 1B guy. Now the Leafs have Campbell. He's their backup and he's signed to a contract they can handle. But they're going to have options, and there's going to be situations out there. Look, Bill Guerin came out the other day and said he wasn't happy with his goaltending in Minnesota. Now, they have a good prospect, but, you know, you're not going with him alone. We'll see. You know, Washington, Pittsburgh, Matt Murray, Vancouver, they'll have Demko. Will they have Markstrom? Calgary, you assume they keep Talbot and Riddick, but maybe not. Edmonton, do they bring back Mike Smith? I mean, there's a lot of unsettled situations out there.
You put Corey Crawford in that mix too?
Yes. You know, he won the series, but, you know, what's he going to want and what are they going to want to give him?
But that's the thing too. Like, a lot of this carries cap implications. Like, we can talk all you want about, oh, they should bring in Robin Leonard, but that's going to be, I mean, Robin Leonard.
I didn't even mention Leonard, yes.
Robin Leonard is someone that is going to want a big ticket on, you know, with term. He's talked about that. It's my time to get paid. It's my time to ring a bell here. And you can't blame the guy.
No, everybody should want to do that.
But all these decisions come with significant cap ramifications. And that's something that the Maple Leafs are going to fight with. They will be one of the teams that this flat cap really harms their roster, their ability to construct the roster as they want.
Well, I think the other question becomes, Jeff, who gets squeezed?
In what sense?
Not everybody's going to get the big contract they want. There's just no money available for that.
See, I wonder about some of the RFAs, whether they get squeezed. I'm not so sure about the unrestricteds. I think the unrestricteds, like all of them, whether it's Taylor Hall or Alex Pietrangelo, these players are going to have their... I think everyone's going to have a haircut here.
But if there's so many goaltenders...
Yeah.
Who gets squeezed? Because there are a lot of goaltenders. There's a lot of available goalies.
And you're thinking you can get one at a bargain because of the glut in the market?
Are there enough chairs for everyone? You know, Vancouver's playing a really interesting game with Markstrom right now. He was their MVP this year. He didn't have a great first round, but you assume he's going to get better. And they can't work out a deal. I've heard those negotiations have been very difficult. So if you're Vancouver right now, you're kind of looking around. You're saying there's a lot of goalies out there. There's a limit of what we can do. They're also in a cap situation. And they're not the only team playing that game. It's going to be interesting. Like, Chicago was not willing to give Leonard more than 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he still has a chance for a big run here. Let's see where it goes. But some of these goalies aren't going to get what they want. It might not be Leonard, but it's going to be somebody.
Couple more players to drill down on. Is Jason Spezza done?
I don't know. I think he wants to play until he drops. And I think they really liked him. I've heard they're going to meet with him, you know, probably in about a week or so just to see where he is. I mean, that would have been quite a way to end his career if they hadn't come back in game four, Jeff.
Fighting?
What an exclamation mark.
Fighting Dean Kukin?
You know, I will tell you this. They loved Spezza this year. They loved him. They thought that he went above and beyond what they expected. They felt he was an incredibly positive influence around their team. I really think with 2020 hindsight, the Mike Babcock era was over on opening night when Spezza got scratched.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't end for another couple of months, but it was over that night. And, you know, that team could have gone really sideways that night. And Spezza didn't let it happen. He was just a total pro. And I know they felt he was even better than what they expected, both as a player and a person. And they had big expectations for him. And I don't know what's going to happen there, but I know they really liked him. And the other one around this is, I know I've predicted this before, and someday I may actually be right. But the Joe Thornton thing hangs around this too. It does.
Yeah.
It's up to Thornton. Like, what does he want to do? And, you know, what are they willing to offer and what everybody is willing to offer. But if you were to tell me that Kyle Dubas wanted to bring Joe Thornton into this to lighten up the mood, I would 100% believe it.
Paul McFarland behind the bench, one of the assistant coaches, now heads to Kingston to take over the head coaching responsibilities there and shepherd players like Shane Wright through their OHL career. That creates a vacancy, and you have a very unique idea for who should fill that spot. Now, We should mention the Maple Leafs have talked to people like Rocky Thompson. Rocky chose to go the San Jose route instead. Give us your idea.
Well, my idea was Bruce Boudreau. And I should qualify this by saying that I think Bruce Boudreau is going to apply or be a contender for whatever head coaching jobs are become available or are available. Like, I don't think it's Bruce Boudreau's first choice to be an assistant coach with the Toronto Maple Leafs. He wants to be a head coach somewhere. But I'm just wondering if the Leafs were interested in an offensive guy and McFarland was their power play guy, and Boudreau certainly has a great offensive mind, and you know he loves the Leafs, Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
He was born in Toronto. He played in Toronto. When he's not watching whichever team he coaches, he watches the Leafs. He's very interested. You're looking for a guy with some, you know, gray hairs on the bench. He has some hair, and it is gray. It's just something I thought about.
Joe Thornton and Bruce Boudreau on the same team. Yeah. Are there enough microphones in Toronto, Elliot?
Well, assistant coaches aren't allowed to talk, right? So Boudreau can't say anything.
What's the point of bringing in Gabby?
Seriously.
Real quick before we move on here and get the podcast going. Safe to say anything that Kyle Dubas does in the offseason is going to have eyes towards not just an improvement from a skill point of view, but also for the Maple Leafs to become snarlier.
Well, this is something I heard in the aftermath of the Game 5 is that, you know, he went out and he got Kyle Clifford, and someone told me he was contemplating more than that. I don't know who, but I'm wondering if he adds some bite on his blue line. Like, he has players coming in next year. He's got Barabanov up front from the KHL, and he's got Lettinen on defense from the KHL. But I think he needs more bite, and I think he will try to add it. So when somebody says to me that Dubas was looking at not just Clifford, it says to me that he's thinking about it. And, you know, two names I kind of put in the blog were Borowiecki and Radko Gudas. I don't know. That's just me throwing stuff up against the wall, right?
You know what, though? Gudas has sneaky good underlying numbers, too.
Yes, he does.
Remember the first thing that Kyle Dubas said when Kyle Clifford was brought aboard? He talked about the underlying numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see a situation where the Maple Leafs bring in Gudas, and that's part of the sell as well.
You know, I think the other thing there, too, is that, you know, you just have to change your identity a little bit, right? I'll tell you something funny I mentioned to someone because, you know, when this podcast comes out, the blog will already be out, but we're taping it while the blog is not done yet. And I mentioned to someone, I wondered if they take a run at Borowiecki, and this person said to me, Mark Borowiecki should send you a Derek Jeter gift basket. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said that if Eugene Melnyk reads that, he's going to give Borowiecki a $200 million contract.
That's awesome. All right. Is the mosquito gone?
I don't see it. I don't know where it went.
All right. We cross our fingers. Hopefully the mosquito has vacated. Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
To see who the winning team is.
The first selection in the 2020 NHL draft belongs to the New York Rangers.
Elliot, did it not seem like, I don't know, 5 minutes ago that Jeff Gorton and the New York Rangers were sending letters to the season ticket holders saying, we're throwing in the towel on the season, we're redeveloping this team, we're going to go through a rebuild, we appreciate your patience, this may take a while, etc., etc., etc. All of a sudden, they win a couple of lotteries. The most recent one on Monday night as they get the first overall pick. They transition from Henrik Lundqvist, a future Hall of Famer, to someone who's probably going to be the best goaltender in the NHL in a couple of years here. Everything's kind of coming up swimmingly for the New York Rangers. I mean, what a redevelopment streak this has been for Jeff Gorton. What a rebuild this has been. Thoughts on the draft lottery that we saw on Monday? If you feel like throwing in your own twist on the conspiracy theories, by the way, feel free and the floor is yours.
You know what? I hate conspiracy theories now. There's too many of them. You know what the true conspiracy theory is now?
JFK suicide.
No conspiracy theory.
Whoa.
Something actually happened because it just happened. That's the true conspiracy theory right now.
You know, there's a feeling. Dan Carlin talked about this in Blueprint for Armageddon, which is a multi-part World War One series podcast. And he talked about conspiracy theories. And he was making the point that people are attracted to conspiracy theories because the idea that one single person can have an effect on the entire world in a profound way is really unsettling and troubling for people. It's much more comforting to have this idea that behind the scenes, in the shadows, is a secret cabal of people that are pulling the strings and are conducting everything. But as much as it might not be in front of you, at least the fact that it's organized and there's a logic behind it is more comforting to people. And that gives rise to conspiracy theories around everything.
I agree with that. Also, we have way too much time on our hands.
Dude, we're all at home.
We're all sitting around doing nothing.
We're all watching this thing. And the minute the poor guy dropped the Ranger ball, you think to yourself, man, if the Rangers come up, dun, 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 dun.
Well, how about the person that sent out the tweet showing how the Leaf ball almost went up first?
And how about, I can't remember who tweeted it, someone put out there that it's the equivalent of, it's the lottery equivalent of John Tavares hitting a goalpost with an empty net.
Yeah, well, I saw that one. That was the one I was referring to. But I just think that right now, Jeff, like we're all, like some people are really working hard, don't get me wrong. But, you know, like most of us are just sitting around doing nothing and we're way overthinking things. So conspiracy theories are everywhere. For one thing is, I think it was really good for the NHL that a team like the Rangers won that was in the lottery.
Agree.
Now, I know people will say that they were on pace for 90 points and Amber's like they're only 2 points behind Carolina. Whatever. Big deal. They were 11th seed in the Eastern Conference. They were going to be in the lottery. So I think that saved the NHL to some degree. I'll say this. Like, you're like me in this job. You get chatter on your phone, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, all of a topic will happen and you get text or your phone blows up or nothing happens. As that group of teams started to be in the lottery, the chatter was definitely picking up. And when I sent out a tweet on Sunday night after the Leafs got knocked out with the 8 teams that were in the lottery, I got a lot of texts from people saying, this really makes me angry. I'm really unhappy with this. And I'm talking about people in the league, coaches, executives, players. Like they were really unhappy with it.
Why?
There were people who were saying the 7th place team in the league should not be in this. Edmonton, for obvious jealousy reasons, they've won too many lotteries. Toronto, again, they were like, that was a playoff team. They were in the playoffs. I didn't get any complaints when the Rangers won. I think it's because of exactly what you mentioned, that this is a team that a year ago was apologizing for what they were doing. And even though they would moved up 11 spots, which tied the record set by Philly a few years ago when they drafted Nolan Patrick, I think most people look at that as being a reasonably fair result. If Pittsburgh had won, or Edmonton had won, or Toronto had won, I think the outrage meter would be off the charts. Off the charts.
One of the interesting things with the Rangers winning the lottery, and they'll take Alexis Lafreniere first overall, you look at the last couple of seasons in the draft. You know, you look at last year in Vancouver. Pick number 1, New Jersey, Metropolitan. Pick number 2, Capo Caco, Metropolitan. Before that, 2nd overall, Andrei Svechnikov into the Metropolitan. Before that, Nico Hischier, Nolan Patrick into the Metropolitan. This year, Alexis Lafreniere goes into the Metropolitan. All of a sudden, that division, like within the past couple of years and moving forward now as well, is getting pretty heavy with some high-end talents.
Yep, going to be tough.
That's going to be a real good division for a long time. And you're going to get a steady dose of Lafreniere and Capo Caco going up against Nico Hischier and the New Jersey Devils, along with Jack Hughes. It's going to be real fun. like you hope that this helps to, you know, to reignite the New York Rangers, New Jersey Devils rivalry.
By the way, I have an idea.
Shoot.
From now on, the draft lottery should be done like this.
I love it.
No locking a second group of people into a second room. Maybe we don't have to show all the ping pong balls and announce the logos, but this is what you do. So the way the lottery goes is four lottery balls come out and the number corresponds to a certain team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Publish it. Say, these are all the numbers and codes. Put them on the NHL website or the Sportsnet website so we benefit from it.
Bingo.
And so everybody can follow along. And you do that. You load them up. Commissioner, this is the number one. Can you confirm this is the number one? Confirm. And you can do it for 10 balls four times. Or whatever. You know, just load them up and do it like they did last night.
Yeah.
And then everybody can follow along live. Like Chris Johnston, every year, he tweets out when it was one, if it's like, say, 1912, when it was 1-9-1, Ottawa had four chances, Toronto had two chances, Philly had three chances, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Let everybody follow along in real time. One. Okay, everybody can look. 1-9. All right. 1-9-1. Ooh, okay, we've got, oh, we're out, or we got three chances. And then just do it live. Let everybody see it.
I got no problem with that.
And besides, in the COVID world, we can't have rooms, tight rooms full of people.
Well, I do like the GMs all in one room. I do like that visual, or as many GMs as you can.
I'm talking about the second room where the second person from each team gets locked in there, right?
Right.
Yeah, so you can still have the GMs there, but why not do it that way?
Works for me. I like it. I thought it was good TV.
I agree.
Give us a quick thought on the Rangers, on where they're at. Now,
first of all, my first thought was Jeff Gordon was not nearly excited enough.
But that's the thing about Jeff Gordon. When have you seen Jeff Gordon excited?
If I was in Jeff Gordon's shoes last night, I would have been jumping around like crazy. I probably wouldn't actually, but I would have been more excited than he was. He really played it cool.
Yeah.
How can you not love this if you're them?
This whole road to respectability, the road back to respectability for the Rangers, has been full of luck, right? You win a couple of lotteries. Shesterkin looks like he is more than just the real deal. Looks like he's going to be a dominant goaltender. You pick up Artemi Panarin, who's a Hart Trophy finalist.
I believe the Rangers knew the whole time that they were going to get him. I really do.
I don't doubt that, but you know, how many times have you seen in the history of the NHL a team with a Hart Trophy finalist and the first overall pick?
Yeah, that doesn't happen too often.
No, that doesn't happen. And here are the Rangers. Like at every single turn, it's come up Big Apple. Like you always talk about you need some luck along the way. Oh, so much of sports is luck. The Rangers have had it. You look at other teams that have gone through rebuilds and had zero luck. How do you think Detroit feels last couple of years? I think Detroit feels this year.
Oh, they're upset.
Oh, I know.
The Red Wings are upset. They're very upset. Make no mistake about it. And I've heard that goes right to the top.
Livid about all of this.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Rangers just cruising right through this rebuild. This rebuild stuff's easy. It's like breaking sticks. No problem. This is a cinch. Having said that, if you're looking to recoup money quickly, you're the NHL and the Players Association. Your salaries are tied to HRR. Is it not better with the Rangers being an elite team and getting them there quickly? Like, this is not just good for the Rangers. This is good for the NHL.
You know, if I have one complaint about the National Hockey League, it's that it's too wired against the big revenue teams. It's my biggest complaint about the NHL. We do not allow the big revenue teams to flex their muscle enough.
But that goes back to 0405 lockout and the idea of parity.
It goes back. I understand all that. I get that. But if I was in charge, and I'm not, and I never will be, there would be a luxury tax. Or there would be one player exception or something. And the money that you would go over would go to the other teams that don't make as much revenue.
Okay, if that's an Arn starter, how do you feel about the concept of cap cash? We're a team that's not going to be able to spend to the cap. We have $5 million of it available. We will trade our $5 million of cap space to you, New York Rangers, in exchange for player slash prospect X.
I'm good with that.
It's all money that would be in the system anyhow.
And, you know, I think now when you are trying to build your revenues out of this, you need to incentivize your big market, your big spenders, the teams that are people are interested in.
I like it because A, I think the NHL does better when there's a measuring stick team.
Mm-hmm.
And B, I think it's better when you have a villain out there.
I agree.
Oh, here come the big spending Rangers. Oh, here come the, you know, throw your money around. Oh, the big Apple. Oh, here comes the big team. I think the NHL does better that way. That traveling hated team.
I think every league does better that way.
Like, how hated are the New York Yankees out there? Well, now the Astros are. But I mean, how historically hated are the Yankees? Just slinging their checkbooks.
And you watch them because you love them, or you watch them because you hate them.
Yeah. It's the Howard Stern rule, right? People that like them listen for 17 minutes. People that hate them listen for 20.
It's the Patriots. You either love them or you hate them, but you watch them.
Yeah.
It's the Lakers. You love them or hate them, but you watch them. The Leafs, you love them, you hate them, but you watch them.
You watch them. How do you feel about the New York Rangers as a team? You have a key Russian, a key Swede, well, two key Russians when you look at the goaltender as well. And now you have a French-Canadian superstar on the wing. This is looking like, A, it's always a better league when the Rangers are playing well. B, it's a fun team to watch. And C, it's become a team with a lot of different personalities on it. And now here comes Alexis Lafreniere. What's your thoughts on the composition of the New York Rangers? Because I think that's key to a lot of this.
I think they're going to be fine. Like, I don't have any concerns about the way all these guys are going to mix. You know, Zibanejad, I think, has been just such a huge player for them. And like his development into what he is, his realization that you need to be serious about what you do, I think it really is key to where they're going. They have some really tough decisions to make. Strome.
Yep.
D'Angelo. Henrik Lundqvist.
That's the whopper. Let's pause on that for a sec. Anything new with Lundqvist? One more year on term. This is Shestorkin's net.
To me, there's three ways. You make it work, which I think it seems unlikely. You trade him. But he's got to be willing to go, or you buy him out. Now, there was a time that I thought that was the most likely scenario.
The buyout?
Yes. I don't know right now. You know, you add that to the level of goalies, right?
Yeah. I just don't know that I can see Henrik Lundqvist. Again, it happens to, listen, we've seen players where they stay with one franchise and you look at their hockey DB and it's one franchise and then the last year it's with another team. And it kind of looks out of place. I just don't know that I can see that with Henrik Lundqvist the way that I saw it with Mike Modano. You do, eh?
I totally do, yep. I could see him playing somewhere else next year. I think he's got a lot of pride.
All right, we'll hit pause on the Rangers because that story continues. Florida Panthers, where are they at right now? And right now includes no Dale Tallon.
Yeah.
We talked about this, I think, for a couple of weeks. Chris Pronger leaving probably should have been an indication that this was on the horizon or something else was coming or there was another shoe that was going to drop.
I know a lot of the rumors were that it was going to be internal, Eric Joyce. About a month ago, actually, I don't even know if it was a month ago. It might have been more recent than that. But somebody hinted to me that if they were going to make the change, it wasn't going to be Eric Joyce.
Pause on that for a second.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back a few seasons, and this is even when, you know, we had Tom Rowe behind the bench with the Florida Panthers, the strong suspicion was that Eric Joyce, who has spent his career with Florida, mainly working with the Florida Panthers American Hockey League operation. He was doing so because he was being groomed. That was going to be the person that grew up in the organization from the GM's level and then graduated to that top spot in the NHL. The feeling was he was going to be around Dale Talon, and we saw him plenty with Dale Talon over the past couple of seasons.
He represented them at one of the lotteries, I remember.
Yeah. The feeling was this was going to be the guy when Dale was either pushed aside or decided to leave. But something changed along the way.
You know, some people said that Eric Joyce doesn't have enough experience. I don't know if that's fair. He's been there for 7 years. He's done a lot of work there. You know, I don't know if I agree that he's too inexperienced for the job. I think you have to decide is if he's the right person for the job. And there was a fear of going back where they were. I think there was a little bit of a fear in, you know, he's really tight with the owner. Does that make for the best working relationship? One of the reasons that Florida went and got Joel Quenneville was because he was new. He had a big name in the game, and his word was such that he would have a big stick in the organization. I think they wanted that fresh outside perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they want with the GM too. So I really believe that when they just made the decision to let go of Talon and not renew his deal, mutual parting of ways, whatever you want to call it, then they came here and they said, we've got to go outside. And I think a lot of the names you're going to hear are guys who have been around the game for a while, been assistant GMs, have experience, and are looking for people who are unafraid to stand up for themselves and will be able to stand up to the owner. And because the owner, Viola, he's very blunt. He's very honest. And I like that in a boss. You know, there's no screwing around. You know exactly where they stand. But the other thing he wants back is he wants you to tell him where the truth. And they're going to look for someone like that. And that's why you're going to hear names like Scott Mellenby, Lawrence Gilman. I think one of the guys they're really interested in is Chris Drury, but I'm not convinced that that's going to be a fit. You know, Chris Drury has a really good setup in New York with the Rangers.
Yep.
I'm not convinced he's going there. You know, Mike Fuda's name will be in this. I'm assuming Sean Burke's name will be in this. I think they're going to look for somebody who's kind of been around, has experience, and has a bit of guts to say, you know what? I'm going to stand up to you and tell you the truth. Now, I think the complicated thing about this job is that I think they want to cut a bit.
Okay, pause on that because they blew their, as we all know, they spent a ton of dough on the coach,
yes,
a ton of dough on the goaltender in the offseason. We thought, okay, this is the Florida Panthers. They realize they're close. Their goaltending hurt them. That was probably the difference last season in making the playoffs and in their case, not making the playoffs, and they addressed it. And then halfway through the season, it's, well, we need to cut some costs and we're going to get rid of Vincent Trocheck.
Yeah. Well, I think it was more than that. See, I really believe that the way Quenneville kind of looked at it was there are places to play where there's not a lot of pressure. Doug Wilson and Todd McClellan used to talk about that with San Jose all the time. We got to create our own pressure because it's too easy here. I think that the new people in Florida felt that way with the Panthers. Team's too comfortable.
Hmm.
Now, you can argue whether or not it was a good trade for Trocheck, but I do think that has something to do with it. Now, do I think that there's a payroll cut thing there? Yes, I do. And that's one of the problems with the Panthers. I think that they, you have to have a plan and you have to stick with it. It can't be on, off, on, off, on, off. And I think that the path is going to be, we're going to shave something here, but you still have to find players and put together a competitive team. And they have spent in the past. Like, you can't knock that they haven't spent money, but they got to stick with it. I think the Trocheck thing was not only about money, Jeff. What I believe is that Quenneville came in there and looked at it and said, this is a team that is too complacent and that needs to change.
Well, they do have some business on the horizon. If you're looking to save money, does that mean you're not bringing back Mike Hoffman, Evgeny Dadonov, Eric Halla, who was part of that Vincent Trocheck deal? Are you letting them go and finding cheaper alternatives? Because that's a lot of talent you're letting walk away.
It goes back to what we kind of talked about before with the goaltenders, right? Who's going to get squeezed? Like, there's not going to be money for all of these guys.
No, I can see them trying to get, like, we know that Michael Matheson's really fallen out of favor there.
Yes.
I don't think that would be a surprise, but then again,
but that's a big ticket.
That's a big ticket with term.
Yeah. Like,
that's $4.8 million for a lot of years. I don't know anyone who's going to be jumping all over that one. Would they ever look at moving Aaron Ekblad?
I don't know. I heard, now it's still early, I heard that Quenneville has worked hard to build relationships with Barkov and Ekblad. Really worked hard. Mm-hmm. I think that that's one of the decisions here, is that we have good players and you have to work with good players. And I think that's smart. Like, if you trade Barkov, for example, how are you replacing that? And that's a good contract.
With you, that's $5.9 million. Yeah. That's one of the best contracts in the NHL for that player.
So I heard that they're trying to work together and understand each other. Now, Ekblad's deal is a big ticket. Number one, that makes it harder to trade. But number two, I heard the same thing, that he and Quenneville have worked together to try to understand each other a bit more. And when you look at their D, I don't think they're thrilled with a lot of their defensemen.
I agree with that.
So if you trade Ekblad, you're really shorting yourself. I always think there's two ways to deal with your problems. You can trade them or you can make it work. I think it's always easier to make it work. And Quenneville's had 1 year with these guys. And I think what he's trying to do is he's trying to figure out who are the guys he can depend on and make it work. And I think Ekblad is one and Barkov is another. And he's trying to make it work with those guys. I like Dadonov a lot. I think he's a really good player. I could see them trying to keep him, but they're not going to be able to keep all these guys.
Elliot, one of my favorite follows, as we turn our attention to the Edmonton Oilers, is Alice Moran. She is an Oilers fan. She's a Canadian actor. She is one of the stars of Decoys. You can watch on CBC, where she's hilarious and probably the best part of that show. Her tweet on Monday won the night for me, hands down. This is after the Oilers did not win the lottery. As we all know, the Rangers did. She tweets, at @Alice_Moran. Deep down, all of you wanted it to go to Edmonton just so you could feel something again. Elliot, what would the feeling that Alice talks about have been should Edmonton have won the lottery?
Well, they were number one on my outrage meter, Jeff.
Yep.
Ahead of Pittsburgh and Toronto. The pitchforks would have been and torches would have been out. Would all the NHL players have been able to escape before the rest of the league laid siege to Edmonton?
Hey, just as an aside, if Edmonton, I was thinking about this too on Monday night, if Edmonton had won it on Monday, would they have changed the lottery rules after?
I mean, like before the end of the show?
No. Moving forward.
No, because I could see Bettman announcing Edmonton wins the lottery and we're changing the rules.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, because they've won it so many times in a short amount of time. Could you see the NHL, if Edmonton, again, this is all speculation, this is all hypotheticals here, but if Edmonton had won it, could you see the NHL, you know, after that? Of course, you can't change it once Edmonton's won it. But for subsequent drafts, a rule in place, you know, you can't win the lottery, the first overall.
I do kind of wonder if they're going to do it anyway.
Really, hey?
Yes, I do. Now, this was an unusual situation because of the way it worked out and these teams got in there. But I still wonder if maybe they tweaked the odds a little bit.
You know what? That's an interesting point, because I think the NHL was going to get to that eventually. And much like everything else in this pandemic, if you listen to anyone, whether it's economists or people that just, study, social life in the world right now, they'll tell you the one thing the pandemic has done is sped everything up. So something you were going to get to 5 years from now, you're at right now. Like, whether it's, we're all working from home doing podcasts. We're probably going to get there eventually. Now we're there. If we're going to get there in 3 years, we're there right now. So a decision like that, moving it forward.
You see that the Wall Street Journal had an article that companies don't like people working from home as much anymore.
Why is that?
No teamwork. Hard to integrate new employees. Can't really teach them about company culture and things like that. I thought that was very interesting. But I also wonder if this is going to make the league get us to an expanded playoffs.
A couple of things. One, the playing around was a lot of fun for fans. And two, if you just look at the NHL is going to have to be in, we need to get money back into the system here, ASAP. That's a great way to do it.
100%. The other thing too, Jeff, is that there was a point during the negotiations for the CBA where I heard talk about expanded playoffs, and I asked someone about it at the league, and they like laughed at me. They're like, that's not happening. And now that we've had it, I wonder if they go back to it.
It was exciting.
Here's the other thing too. The way I would do the expanded playoffs is I would do them like we did them this past week. Now, normally, you're not going to want games in the afternoon, but I think you have to start one at 3 o'clock.
I got a problem with that, but then I don't have a traditional 9 to 5.
Yeah, that's the tough thing. There's no question about it. Can you do it? Maybe not when life is quote unquote normal again. Mm-hmm. But I like this. I think now that it's out of the bottle, it's hard to go back. So the two biggest questions I have after this weekend is, aside from all the trade stuff that all these teams are doing, is, are the expanded playoffs and the changes maybe to the draft lottery things that are coming?
Pause on that one. Let's get to the Oilers. These are all excellent questions.
Yeah.
Oilers, what happens now? We had Connor McDavid last season, and when it was all done, talking about frustration and how frustrating it is for him. The Oilers, I think you have to look at the team and say they took a step. Depends how biggest step you believe that is. Had a top power play, had a top penalty kill. You saw younger players pushing for positions, the emergence of Ethan Bear and Caleb Jones and Kalori Yamamoto. Leon Draisaitl picks up the Art Ross. Like, there were big steps that the Oilers made, but there's still a lot of question marks. What are the big ones for you?
Well, the thing that I look at is that McDavid and Draisaitl produced and they still didn't win. They didn't have enough support. And so you've got to keep growing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cassian didn't have it all series. And Athanasiou, I think he's going to be a cap casualty. I don't see how they're going to be able to qualify him with what he can do in arbitration. So you're looking at that again. Ken Holland this year brought stability by not panicking. He was just patient. He found some support players. Like last year, one of their biggest problems was their bottom six got caved in. You know, bringing some of those guys in this year, their bottom six didn't get caved in. It was better.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't think he wants to make panic trades. They traded young players before. He doesn't want to do that. You got to make a decision on goaltending. You got to find wingers. So I'm looking up and down the roster. They got a lot of young D. Do they trade one of the older ones?
You have Broberg coming. You have Bouchard coming. Bear is there. Jones is there.
You have Benning as a depth guy.
How many defensemen are you allowed to dress? Because they got a lot of them.
You can dress 10, but it might not work.
So who's the odd man out then? Like, if you look at all these young players that are pushing, who's the odd man out?
Do you look at some of the older D? Like, do you ever go to the two top guys?
Klefbom and Larson?
Well, here's the thing. Larson is 1 year away from unrestricted free agency.
Mm-hmm.
he's a right-hand shot. I mean, the problem is if you take him away, your other right-hand shots are Russell, who's got 1 year left, Green, who's retiring, Benning and Bear. On the left side, you've got Nurse, you've got Jones, and you've got Clefbaum, who's signed for 3 more years at a reasonable number. Now, before Holland got there, they looked at Clefbaum for Krug with Boston, right?
Mm-hmm.
They talked about it. But, you know, that was pre-Holland, so that doesn't necessarily mean anything. I just wonder, with all those kids coming, and you look at them on defense, Bouchard shoots right, he's going to play next year. Broberg shoots left, he's now in the picture. You've got Samarukov a bit farther away. Are you keeping Lagesson? Those are guys who are left shots. I do wonder if, and this is just me spitballing, would they look at Clefbaum and Larson, particularly if they don't think they can sign Larson?
If they're looking for help up front, and you're looking to do a trade with a team that's looking for defense, how do you not pick up the phone and talk to Kyle Dubas?
So this is one of the things I wrote in the blog this week. You know, Edmonton and Toronto, to me, they look like potentially natural partners. And again, I think this might have been pre-Holland, but they've talked about some stuff. Like Connor Brown, before he went to Ottawa, he came up quite a bit. The Leafs did look at Benning and Kara, a deal that fell apart because Kara got hurt. I look at those Toronto wingers that we discussed earlier. Some of those guys could really fit in Edmonton. But I really do believe that Holland is not going to move his young D. So where's the fit? Unless Toronto's making a deal, they've got Riley and Muzzin and Dermott and Sandin on their left side. I don't know if it makes as much sense anymore.
Andreas Athanasiou, trade deadline acquisition, what happens there?
Well, you know, the change in the ARB rules this year, that if you walk away, he can take your offer, right? That you put into your arbitration offer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Are they going to have the cap room to do that?
Is that going to keep Edmonton from qualifying him?
Yeah, I think it's possible.
Like, I think they're going to be, Jim Rutherford hinted at this when we talked to him on the podcast a few weeks ago. There's going to be some really interesting players that don't get QOs because the team is scared of getting killed in arbitration.
You know, I heard Mike is going to be that guy too. Maybe Brandon Montour in Buffalo.
I heard that.
So I think Holland's going to be patient. I think he's going to try to grow within. But where's your biggest strength? It's your D. And I don't think he's dealing any of his young guys. And I don't think he's dealing Nurse. I think he really thinks that Nurse is a huge part of their group and a guy who really bleeds Oilers. So, you know, I wonder about the guys at the top. Would he ever do it?
Nurse's ticket, by the way, goes up from 3.2 to 5.6 next year.
Yeah. Now, if you're in a year and you can't, and you're worried that Nurse is going to go to free agency and you can't sign him, that might change. And that might mean it's harder to trade Clefbaum, but you know, I just look at how do you make yourself better if you don't want to deal your young guys, which I don't think they should do.
A couple more thoughts on the Oilers. One, Mike Smith's future. Is there one in Edmonton?
Well, again, we talked about how many goalies are going to be available, right?
Mm-hmm.
He got the game one start. It wasn't entirely his fault, but he couldn't keep it. You know who I could see in Edmonton? A guy like Greiss.
I can see Greiss in a lot of places. To me, he's one of the sneaky, along with a player like goalie like Yaroslav Halak, one of the sneakiest.
Or Khudobin.
Sneaky good careers that no one talks about, totally flies under the radar. Greiss has been, they had that 1 year where it didn't really, kind of fell apart for him, but Greiss has been a real good goaltender for a lot of years here. Not a whisper around him.
I see that. I see that kind of guy coming to Edmonton.
Do they have any German players on Edmonton?
No.
Oh. Jesse Puljujärvi, what's happening there?
You know, there were some rumors, and you heard these too, right?
Oh, yeah.
That he was coming back. I think you were the guy who told me about them.
The idea was that the Oilers were looking to sign him to make him easier to move.
And you heard it was close.
That's what I heard.
And I looked into it, and I think the team thought it was closer than the player did.
Hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean it won't happen, but I heard the team thought it was closer than the player did.
Well, I guess the Rangers are going through something similar with Elias Anderson, so it isn't technically unique in the NHL right now, but what happens here? Like, doesn't something has to give with Puljujärvi in Edmonton?
I think a trade, but I think Puljujärvi probably wants control over a situation, right, where he goes to.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he just doesn't want to agree to a deal until he knows where he's going.
You know, you look around and people in his draft class, like that's the Buffalo draft, that's the Austin Matthews draft. Everybody around him in that draft class are distinguishing themselves, doing things in the NHL. How much longer, if you're Puljujärvi, how much longer can you sit out here?
I think you've got to play next year.
I'm with you. Get back into the NHL.
If you want to come back, you have to do it next year.
Okay. From the Oilers to the Penguins.
Yep.
They have the 15th overall pick. Here's the question. They have the 15th overall pick. Did they hand it to Minnesota and be done with the Jason Zucker deal? Or do they hold it, make the pick, or trade it, I suppose, and give Minnesota the pick next season? It's kind of a San Jose decision here with the Erik Karlsson deal, and that didn't work out well for San Jose. Where does Jim Rutherford think this team is, I suppose, is the question that this winks at.
How good is this draft?
Really good. Really, you're going to get someone, even at 15.
Well, then I think you keep the pick and you take your chances.
You could hand Minnesota a lottery pick.
Yeah, you could.
Who knows?
But you got to bet, right?
That's it.
The second part of this question is, what are you doing?
We interrupt this program to bring you a special report.
Okay, a couple of other things to insert here on the podcast.
Yep.
Pittsburgh Penguins not renewing the contracts of assistant coaches Sergei Gonchar, Jacques Martin, and Mark Recchi, taking the assistance away from Mike Sullivan.
There was a rumor that this was going to happen. I checked into it on Sunday, and I just didn't have it strong enough to go with it. Look, like, I think Mike Sullivan has several years left, three or four. And plus, also, he just won two cups. Like, I don't think you should be firing a guy who won two cups 3 and 4 years ago. To me, that's craziness. But I think at the very least, like, you know what that means. Like, I was listening to your show today with Berkey, and he talked about how they did that to try to prop up Ron Wilson.
Try to save his job, yeah.
We all know the Leafs did that last year with Mike Babcock. And I think at the very least, it shows that, you know, things are on notice in Pittsburgh. This is going to be a really interesting summer there. We talk elsewhere in this podcast about Bruce Boudreau. You know, if Boudreau's not a head coach, I wonder if he's going to end up as a pretty highly paid assistant coach somewhere.
The question then becomes, because Rutherford talked about this, about needing change, and this is the first salvo shot, you wonder if everything's available that's not nailed down. And then the question becomes, Elliot, what's nailed down in Pittsburgh?
He said that the three big guys are not getting traded. And we all know Crosby's not getting traded. Malkin's got 2 years left on his deal all of a sudden. You know, Letang, the one thing about Letang is, like, Pittsburgh knows him better than anybody else. There's some things I think about Chris Letang. I think he's competitive as hell, which to me is the most important characteristic. I think he's competitive as hell. I think he competes unbelievably hard. I think he's a gamer. Like, his body has been through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on what Pittsburgh was willing to do, if I was a defenseman away, I would think about it. Now, I'm just saying that if I was a good team that thought that kind of player could make the difference for me, I would be calling Pittsburgh. I mean, I would be calling Pittsburgh a Malkin too. I mean, they might not do it, but you still make the call. Like, the one thing I look at is, you see this with so many teams. Pittsburgh's problem is not Crosby, Letang, and Malkin. Their problem is Father Time.
Hmm.
And how many times in sports do you see a team wait 1 or 2 years too long and then it really catches up to them? So when Jim Rutherford says he's not moving those guys, I take him at face value. But what I also say is if you really want to change the Penguins, maybe on the fly, is there anybody that can call you and make you say, I didn't want to trade him, but then I got offered this? And I got to tell you, if I was the Maple Leafs, I might be making that call.
Well, that seemed like the obvious theme as you're running down this this idea of who thinks that they're a defenseman away. And speaking of the Maple Leafs.
And you know what? They held all their availabilities today. And how many guys talked about Will?
John Tavares right away talked about, you know, competing and all the buzzwords about competition. And Jake Muzzin talked about what the younger kids need to learn. Everybody talked about consistency and how many times have we said it on this podcast. You know, greatness is doing that thing over and over and over and over again. It's not just showing up and showing signs and flashes of greatness as the Maple Leafs have done in the past couple of seasons. Kyle Dubas talked about that at the press availability today.
So if I was a good team that thought I had a chance to be great and I saw this right-hand shot defenseman who's got 2 years left on his contract and he's competitive as hell. Like I said, Chris Letang to me is one of the most competitive guys in the league.
Yep.
I'm calling Jim Rutherford and I'm saying, I know what you said. Now, the microphones are off. There's no media bugging the phone, although I really try. What are you really saying? I might do it with Malkin too if I was Montreal. Hey Jim, you know, just could I change your mind?
With both those guys.
Yeah. But Father Time is undefeated.
Interesting offseason ahead for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Now back to our program.
The thing about Malkin that was really weird is that the first two shifts of that Montreal series, did you not think they were going to sweep that series and he was going to have 25 points?
Yep. I thought this was going to be a layup for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
And it just never happened. And I was shocked watching them in game four.
This has been my point about Pittsburgh for a couple of years here. I don't know if I've shared this with you on the podcast yet. I don't know that I've seen a team with as high a skill that Pittsburgh possesses that has to work as hard for their wins as the Penguins do. And the minute they take their foot off the gas, they fall apart. Like, it is such a skilled team, but if they don't all work hard, it unravels. Like, how many times have you seen the Penguins unravel in the last couple of seasons? A lot of times. And how many times have you watched a Penguins game and you said to yourself, man, this team is the best team in the NHL? And the difference is when they don't work, they fail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some teams can every now and then just kind of coast on the skill, maybe even get through a series just coasting on the skill. Pittsburgh has that skill to do that. But if they don't work, it falls apart. All falls apart.
And when you watch them, did you not only think that they weren't working hard? It looked like they didn't care.
Or they just thought this series was going to be easy because we're the Pittsburgh Penguins and here's a team that got rid of everybody at deadline.
Yeah, but by game four, that was no longer the case, right? Game four, they know they're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, those power plays in game four, it looked like the first time we were taught power plays in Adam hockey. I was stunned watching them. And also, don't forget, before they won game two, they'd lost 7 straight playoff games.
Yeah.
They need a reset. They need some sort of refresher. They traded Kessel. Didn't work. Okay. Here's an early bet as to who could be a Penguin next year. You ready?
Yeah.
Max Domi.
Those rumors have been out there going back to when he was in Arizona.
Yeah.
I think it was like one of the deadlines. Wasn't there discussion between the two?
I believe so. I can't remember right now, but someone listening to this will tell us.
I would not be shocked at that at all. We all know the association between the Domi family and the Lemieux.
Yep.
The families are close. It all lines up. It makes sense. Max playing with Sid all makes sense. I would not be surprised at that at all, Elliot.
So there you go. I've already made one trade.
Congratulations.
My first NHL trade.
Congratulations, sir. And you did it without consultation. You did it without an assistant general manager. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
Nashville Predators. They spent a lot of money chasing goals and essentially got none. What happens now?
Well, that's a great question. Okay. I assume they let Granlund walk. I assume Craig Smith walks. That guy's been a Predator for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if Kyle Turris gets bought out.
That's a huge buyout.
Yep.
That's an enormous buyout. That's $24 million worth of buyout. Two-thirds, but still.
I'm wondering if it happens, though.
That's such a deal. I know moving him is impossible, but that's a huge... And with a flat cap, too, for each?
I know. I'm just wondering if that's what happens, though.
Listen, you have a lot of big-name guys on big tickets and low production. Turris is one of them. We've talked about Ryan Johansson before at Ada Copy.
Yeah, but they came back. The Johansson, Arvidsson, Forsberg line came back in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But the Turris, Duchene, Granlund line did not. The thing about Turris, though, is if you buy him out, it's $2 million a year for the next 8 years. You can deal with that. And it's just not working.
What was the deal with him at the World Championships last year? Just as an aside, being made captain. I was told that was a favor to someone. I'm assuming it was someone in Nashville.
We talked about it on the podcast. They asked for him to have a lot of responsibility because they thought it would help him. I don't know what happened there. I honestly don't know. Like, I'm a Kyle Turris guy. Like in 2017 with Ottawa, I thought he was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he'd be a great player for Nashville. I thought he would totally fit into their identity. And it just hasn't worked. It's kryptonite there for him. So I don't think that buyout is unmanageable. At $2 million a year, I know it's 8 years, but to me, it's not unmanageable. And it's just not worth it. Would you rather pay him $2 million a year for 8 years?
No, I get that.
Or $6 million a year for 4 years?
I'm just looking at all that term.
Yeah, I know. I don't like term either.
Matt Duchene, it's just the first season, but the audit so far is not so good.
No, it didn't work. Like, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I think you have to change your mix. First of all, you have to change your mix because you're kind of going backwards. And they had a nightmare of a year. They just weren't very good until the end. Josi was a great player for them, but a lot of them just weren't as good. And I think the fact that Johansson, Forsberg, and Arvidsson played very well against Arizona, I think that really helps them and says, okay, we can stay with these guys. But I think around Duchene in your second line, you got to change your mix. And that's why I have a feeling that they're going to buy out Turris. And I just assume that Granlund and Smith are not coming back. We'll see what else they got.
Bang on about Roman Josi, but his ticket goes from 4 to 9. Sorry, actually, the Judd Moldaver signature, 9.059.
That's why, you know, Carter Hart's next deal is going to have a 79 in it.
Matthews had a 34 in it, so yeah. It's the Judd Moldaver signature here. Is there any chance, because you always look to, you know, trade from positions of strength. And I know this is a team that's moved Seth Jones and Shea Weber and PK Subban and Ryan Suter, but is there any chance... Any chance that they move someone like Ryan Ellis?
I doubt it. I watch way too much Nashville, Arizona, right?
I think he's a hell of a defenseman. I'm thinking, like, if you're going to trade, you trade from positions of strength. And that guy is flat out good.
Why would you trade that guy?
If you're looking to get goals. Like, this team needs goals.
Yes, I'm not doing that. I think he's a big part of who they are.
All right, from the Nashville Predators, let's have a look at the Winnipeg Jets. How much do you look at Winnipeg and just say, it should have been better if not for the injuries?
I think there's a lot of that. I thought that team played really hard this year, really hard. They got beaten up at the end. I think there were several things that happened to them that were really great this year. Hellebuck went to another level.
Yep.
The word on him was that you could frustrate him and make him lose his mind. He was much better at that this year. And I think long-term, that's a great thing for Winnipeg. I think they found a guy who was much better than a lot of us realized in Pionk. That was a big success for them this year. I thought Line A took another step, and I thought Ehlers, especially in the playoffs, even though they lost, took another step.
Yeah.
They went through a lot of crap this year. It was a really hard year. I would think this year is going to make them better in the long run.
Do you see Sheveldayoff making any moves?
Yeah, I do. I think they'll look on D, but I like his group. The one thing you got to wonder about is in a year, where are you going with Line A? You can't really bridge him again.
I thought bridge was his decision, though.
It was.
Was it not?
It was. But, you know, you're getting to the point where you don't want to do that again. He's going to be too, he's going to have arb rights. His arb number is going to be huge. He's going to be 2 years away from unrestricted free agency. Is that what you want to do?
Nope. You know, I'll tell you, someone else too, that, and we talked about this last season with a player like Patrick Maroon. Guys that help you so much more in the playoffs than they do in the regular season. I thought Adam Lowry was fantastic for Winnipeg in that Calgary series.
I agree.
I think that guy is so valuable to that team. I know it's not, you know, Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, all big superstars. Man, I thought Lowry was great for the Winnipeg Jets.
I thought Kopp was pretty good too.
Both of them.
Yeah, I mean, those are good players.
And Ross Levick was really good.
Lowry's a UFA in a year. But Lowry's the kind of guy that, big center, going to be a lot of interest.
There sure will. Minnesota Wild, as we start to wind down the podcast here, going through all the teams that are out of the playoff picture. Minnesota Wild.
Well, the thing I think about Minnesota is that I was really interested in Bill Guerin postseason, where he talked about he was disappointed in the goaltending. You know, they let go of their longtime goalie coach, Bob Mason. He'd been there since he's been there 18 years. I think the thing here that's really interesting about this is that I thought he was one of the most patient GMs all year. Dumba's name was out there, didn't do it. Brodin's name was out there, didn't do it. Fiala held on to him. There was a time they wanted to get rid of him, but they held on. And that turned out to be great. And they got Kaprizov coming.
Yeah,
I'm really curious to see what Guerin's going to do.
Is the Zach Parise deal still out there?
I think that's going to be a big question.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The discussions started last summer, and they became more obvious at trade deadline. This is a deal for Andrew Ladd with the Islanders.
Yeah.
They couldn't make it work on trade deadline day. The belief was they would revisit it.
Koivu was supposed to go to the Islanders too.
Koivu was part of that deal too?
Well, I don't know if it was part of the deal, but the Islanders asked for him. Might have been a separate deal.
If you're Minnesota and the Islanders, Lou Lamoriello, Bill Guerin, are you talking again about Parise for Ladd to try to make the money work?
If the Islanders are into it, I think you are. You know, I'll tell you something else too. I don't think they were very happy with Matt Zuccarello, but that's also a tough contract to trade.
Oof, that sticks a copy. You mentioned Mikko Koivu. I love Mikko Koivu. I wish that when he retired, there would have been at least one Selke trophy for him. There is not. And the question becomes, is Mikko Koivu done in the NHL?
I don't know.
I'm with you. Like, I hate wrapping guys up. Like, oh, yeah, he's done. He's finished. Who knows?
Well, put it this way. I think he's done in Minnesota.
As they move on. Alex Galchenyuk?
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is with Koivu is, does he think about going to play, say, in Finland with an out clause? Does he do what Joe Thornton might do?
Start in Switzerland and then come back?
Yeah.
You think we see a lot of that from guys?
I'll tell you this. I think you could see a lot of it from AHL guys.
I believe that.
I had someone tell me this week that there's players out there offering teams, I'll come for no money, just room and board.
I just need to play.
Yeah.
In net.
I wonder if the kid's going to get a chance.
He looked good when they called him up.
Guerin put those guys on notice, eh?
Kaapo Kekkonen or Kaapo Kähkönen.
When I look at Guerin, I see a guy who decided he was going to be patient. he was going to wait a year, and now he's made his decisions. And now he's going to see what's out there.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Bob McKenzie calling it a full-time career on TSN. That's next on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Elliot, did I ever tell you the first media thing that I ever did?
No.
It was 1988. I don't know if this actually qualifies as a media thing, but it started to put the bug in my head that this might be something that I would want to do, because when I saw it, it looked really cool and I couldn't believe my name was attached to it. I've been a Hockey News subscriber for I don't know how many years. Going back to, I don't know how old I was. Hockey News was just always around the house. And in 1988, after the Cicerelli-Richardson incident at Maple Leaf Gardens, I fired off, for the first time ever, a letter to the Hockey News about it, thinking it'll go nowhere. I don't know why I did it. And my Hockey News shows up a couple of weeks later, and it's printed. And I thought, wow, this is the coolest thing in the world. And there was just that feeling of, you know, being published or being recognized for an opinion. And you know who the editor-in-chief of the Hockey News was at that time that published my letter that in a roundabout way got me started in this goofy career?
Bob McKenzie?
Bob McKenzie.
Nice.
Bob McKenzie wrapping up in a full-time capacity, as he announced on TSN this week. Going to a limited schedule for the next 4 or 5 seasons. Listen, that's Bob has been someone who's been a giant in the industry for as long as we can all remember. What are your thoughts on Bob McKenzie not calling it a career, but taking a pause and taking a small step back and lightening the load that he's been shouldering for 40 years or so?
I mean, the number one thing I think is that I'm glad he got to call his shot. There's a lot of people in our business who don't get to call their shots, right?
Yeah.
And that's number one. You know, in life, it doesn't go that way. So I'm glad that he did it and is continuing to do it. You know, part of me wishes he was gone for good so I didn't have to deal with him finding out information. You know, I was thinking about this, like the insider role, right?
Yeah.
He's really the first one in hockey. There were always really good columnists. Like Red Fisher, he really knew what was going on with the Montreal Canadiens. He used to be the domain of the beat writer.
Hang on. Red Fisher stopped trades. Like, that's how powerful he was. There was a Toronto-Montreal trade on the table. Lehman, Clark, Corson, and I think Lemieux. And Fisher called up the Habs when he caught word of it and said, if you make this deal, I will bury you guys. And the deal wasn't made. That's power.
Well, that's but that was the power of the beat writer, right? Like the beat writer used to have the power, and he had huge power. Like you and I have talked about those books by Scott Young, like the Hockey is a Battle and Heaven and Hell in the NHL. Like those beat writers who covered the Leafs and the Canadians, they were hugely powerful. And some of them still are. You know, Larry Brooks had a lot of sway with the Rangers. But he was the first big insider in the NHL. And the league insider has now, you take a look at them. In the NFL, there's Adam Schefter and Jay Glazer. And in the NBA, there's Adrian Wojnarowski. And now there's Sham Sharania. In baseball, there's a few of them. There's Jeff Passan. There's John Heyman. You know, there's a few guys like that. And in hockey, Bob was the first one. And Bob predated a lot of these guys. Like, when everybody talks about notes columns, the guy who gets a lot of credit for him is Peter Gammons, who was probably the first big baseball insider. And now, you know, they're all over the place. You know, Bob was the first one in hockey. and he created a role that, you know, a few of us do now. And I think the most challenging thing about it was, I think like a lot of fans out there, we have people who come to our phones, right? Mm-hmm. And whenever they tweet, it dings on your phone. And, you know, I get the ding on my phone, and I'd look and I'd say, like, what now? And actually, it was funny because him and I talked about that, about how there were a few of us who, whenever, you know, you saw that name on your phone, you're sitting there going, how is this just about to ruin my day before you even look at it?
Hmm.
But he definitely was the first one, and it opened the door for the possibility of other ones. And, you know, I will say this too, like, I've heard people out there who say, oh, the role of the insider is stupid. Who cares if you break a trade 3 seconds before everyone else? Jeff, you work in this business. Our bosses care.
I still think fans care too.
Oh, last year.
I don't buy this idea that who cares. No, they do.
Last year, I will tell you, one of my buddies sent me, someone on Twitter kept a scoreboard of the trade deadline. And they sent me a tweet, and he goes, you had a good day today. This guy on Twitter kept score. And I was like, don't send me this garbage. And the reason is because it's like anything else in life. Like, sometimes you catch the bear, and sometimes the bear catches you. And I think what Bob did was he created the role in hockey.
The other thing about that role, and I've always felt this way about it, is as much as it might be inconvenient sometimes for leagues, we use the NHL for the obvious example, as much as it might be inconvenient and at times awkward for those leagues to have people like Bob, people like you, people like CJ and Dregs and Pierre out there doing that work, it creates different types of fans. And those types of fans generally stay with your sport longer because they get a different view into the league. And they have another way to attach themselves to that sport and follow that sport that's more than just, yay, we won, boo, we lost. Honestly, Elliot, I think this is one of the things that isn't discussed enough about that role. That role not only creates fans, but lengthens their time spent with that sport because they get a different look at how that thing is made and how the day-to-day operations of that sport works. That makes you a fan longer. Always believe that about the insider role.
I would hope it's true. You hope you're creating some interest. And, you know, the other thing I'll say is it was competitive. There were times we all got annoyed at each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were all friendly. There were times we'd go out for dinner on the road, and I liked those dinners. I mean, they're all great guys. But in the heat, we were competitive. Very competitive.
In your mind, did you compete against Bob, or did you just treat it like golf, and I'm just going to play the course? I'm competing against the course.
It's sort of like you play the course, but you realize there's one hole that you really better be good at.
Congratulations to Bob McKenzie on a wonderful and influential career. We've all got our own personal stories. I know I have mine, of whether it's a text you get from Bob or a conversation you have. The one thing I always admired about Bob too is he realized that he had a platform, and he used that to elevate different voices and to elevate different people. Not that he was like, I'm here to wave my magic wand over this person and give you royal assent. Like, it wasn't like that with Bob. It was, I understand I have a position in this industry, and I'm not just going to get to the top and then kick the ladder down. I'm going to help some people come up here at the same time. Always respected that about Bob.
Agreed.
Congratulations, Bob, on a wonderful full-time career as you transition to a part-time career now with TSN. And that's it. That's the pod this week. We do have a second podcast. Elliot, this was a lot of fun. We sat down with Brendan Morrison the other day, former NHLer. You know him best with his work with the Vancouver Canucks, probably as part of the West Coast Express with Marcus Naslund and Todd Bertuzzi. And it was an interesting interview. Like, the a couple of the key points when you talk to Morrison about his negotiations with Lou Lamoriello over his contract in New Jersey. I thought that answer was fantastic. Fans can listen to that one a little bit later on this week as I try to give as many hooks here as possible. And going to arbitration with Brian Burke. Elliot, without giving away the story, that story was great.
Brian Burke told us that story once, and Kelly Rudy was there, and Kelly said to Berkey, if you would have said to me what you said to Morrison, I would have punched you in the face.
So that podcast is coming out a little bit later on this week, special gift puck for you all. In the meantime, as we thank our producer, as always, Amel Delich, for putting this beast together every week. Thank you, Amel. Taking us out as a four-piece punk rock band out of Denmark, Ice Age released their...
What?
Yeah.
A four-piece punk rock band out of Denmark? Oh, well, where'd you find these guys?
Ice Age, man.
Oh, that's good.
Ice Age released their fourth studio album, Beyondless, in 2018, and during the quarantine, wrote the track Lockdown Blues in an attempt to address our troubling new reality during COVID-19. The track is available for purchase on Bandcamp, with all profits going directly to Doctors Without Borders, who are not only assisting in countries during the pandemic, but are also now helping the people of Beirut. Check out the track on Bandcamp. Here with Lockdown Blues is Ice Age. Thanks for listening to 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Your river flows again.